Welcome in, sports fans. It is the Glass Half Full, an ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Thanks so much for tuning in. We've got a lot to talk about today. I'm just going ahead and jump right into it. The only playoff game we had last night was in the NHL. Game 4 between the Oilers and the Stars. Dallas took advantage of a slow start by Edmonton. They jumped out to an early, quick 2-0 lead. Looked like they might run away with that one there in the first period. But credit to the Oilers. Kind of fought back in it, found their rhythm, and were able to tie it up before the end of the first period. They tacked on, I think, another 2 in the second, and then another one just for good insurance in the third, going to win 5-2 in that one. So that series tied at 2 games apiece. Game 5 of that series, that's a sneaky good series too, by the way. I know we talked a lot about the Rangers and the Panthers and how that series is kind of starting to heat up and get pretty good. This series between Edmonton and Dallas is pretty fantastic as well. If you haven't watched any of the games, I definitely urge you to watch Game 5 of this series coming up on Friday night. Definitely going to be a good one. And I think this Game 5 is going to be pretty crucial. I think this is one of those series that right now it's tied 2-2, but whoever wins Game 5 is going to put themselves in pretty much the driver's seat, and unless they completely collapse, going to have a great opportunity at winning this series. So we'll see how it plays out again. Game 5 coming up on Friday night. Tonight at 7:30 on TNT, we've got the Game 5 for the Western Conference Finals in the NBA. Going to see if maybe Dallas can close it out. They had an opportunity to on Tuesday. Couldn't get the job done. We'll see if they can do it tonight. But the Timberwolves, they found a rhythm. They found consistency. That's what they needed. And we talked about it through most of this series, is that what Minnesota really needed most was consistent play from those surrounding support stars. Not Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards was showing up, balling out every single night. He was doing what he needed to do. But they needed to find guys like Karl Anthony Towns, like Rudy Gobert. They needed to find those guys and have them step up and play consistently. And they did that in Game 4, and that's why we're talking about a Game 5 tonight at 7:30. So definitely looking forward to this. Again, if Karl Anthony Towns steps up and plays in Game 5 the way he did in Game 4, there's a really good chance that we have a Game 6. And it gets really interesting in the Western Conference Finals for the NBA. But again, you've got to be consistent. And Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, those surrounding pieces around Anthony Edwards has yet to do that. I think they found a good rhythm Tuesday night in Game 4. If they can continue to build off of that, should make a pretty fun series tonight. On the Dallas side, look, Kyrie and Luka's got to get back to being Kyrie and Luka. They got to get back to being those superstar players. Not saying they played bad in Game 4, but they did get outplayed by the combo pair. If you compare the pairs for each team, whether it's Towns and Edwards for Minnesota or Kyrie and Luka for Dallas, Kyrie and Luka got outplayed. Not by a lot, but they got outplayed by enough to cost them that game. They've got to make some shots down the stretch. Look, Dallas had opportunities down the stretch the last few minutes of Game 4 to really kind of step up, make some shots. The way we've seen them do it earlier in this series. Remember Game 1, Dallas within like, what, the last 3 minutes erased like a 15-point deficit and battled back and won that game. And it was really kind of a turning point where we thought Dallas was really going to just run away with this series. But Minnesota's kind of done a good job of calming that down. And they put their foot down in Game 4 and didn't allow that to happen again. And I think that shows that this team is, despite the fact they're down 3-1, they're growing. They're learning. They're getting better throughout this series against Dallas and the Mavericks. So if they can shut down Kyrie and Luka from doing that again towards the end of the game, because look, Dallas is going to keep it close. You're not going to blow Dallas out. Dallas is going to keep it close. And they're going to set themselves up to have Kyrie and Luka on the court within the last 5 minutes of the game, especially if it's a close game, and they're going to put them out there to do what they do best, and that's go out there and win a ball game for them. And we've seen that multiple times in this series for Dallas. They've got to get back to that tonight. It's going to be a close game. Just about every game in this series has been a close game. And they've got to have Kyrie and Luka step up, make those shots late in the fourth quarter. We didn't see them do that in Game 4. Definitely have to have it in Game 5 if you're the Mavericks and you want to advance. Also, for the Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards got to find whatever that Bugs Bunny Miracle Space Jam juice he drank in Game 4, whatever that was, You remember that scene in the original Space Jam? Bugs Bunny has like the secret drink, whatever, Michael's secret stuff or whatever it was called. And they all took a swig of it and all of a sudden start playing better. Whatever Anthony Edwards had that was like that before game four, he needs to have before game five. Because the problem that he's had, one of the knocks on him has been, especially this late into the postseason, fourth quarter rolls around, he's having to do a lot of stuff by himself, so he tends to wear down and get tired. He didn't do that in game four. He was still playing strong through the fourth quarter, so he's got to find a way to harness that and have that again, not only for game five, but six and potentially even seven if they want to go on to win this series. But definitely going to be lots of fun. So the Mavericks and the Timberwolves, Western Conference Final of the NBA playoffs. It's game five coming up tonight, 7:30 again on television on TNT. Definitely going to be lots of fun for that one. And time to move on now. College football. And this story. Look, if you have been listening to The Glass Half Full since the start, I've said it a couple of different times on a couple of different occasions when I've talked about this person. And it's not anything having to do personally with this particular broadcaster. I just think their views are terrible, and I don't think they're well thought out. Colin Cowherd has his own show. Good for him. I just don't think he thinks things through before he comes on his show and says them. Case in point, this most recent time about USC dropping Notre Dame permanently from their schedule. And this all started because earlier this week a report or a story came out that was talking about how USC, they're starting off the season this year against Brian Kelly and the LSU Tigers. They tried to get out of that game. They tried to maneuver some things around to where they didn't have to play that game heading into their first season in the Big Ten. And Colin decided to kind of take off of that and kind of spin off of it of, if I'm USC, what do I do? And all of that stuff. And basically what it turned into was him basically saying, if I'm USC, how do I make things easier for me? How do I take the easy route? How do I take that road that's most traveled, but still find a way to the college football playoffs? His solution, permanently drop Notre Dame, because why do you need another tough game on your schedule when you could schedule a cupcake that you'll beat by 50, 60 points and have no problem with? This is what he said. Here, this just, yep, go ahead and listen.
College football has been in transition, hyper-speed transition, for about 18 months. Before that, it was in mild transition. And as I look at a team like USC that will now play on a regular basis at Penn State, in Ann Arbor, Columbus, while maintaining a game with UCLA, a rivalry game, in Eugene, in Seattle, at Camp Randall, forget LSU off the schedule. Do I have to, with a stronger conference, more brutal road games, a 12-team playoff, a tougher conference championship, I'm kicking Notre Dame off the schedule?
Yeah, he would go on after that to say, basically throw the history of that rivalry between Notre Dame and USC out the window, because college football doesn't care about history and rivalries anymore. And that's just simply not true. The Iron Bowl, still one of the most watched games of the college football season. Florida State, Florida, Georgia. We're getting Texas A&M and Texas back. Texas, Oklahoma staying in the same conference together now in the SEC. They're still going to be a rivalry. You're still going to have Ohio State and Michigan. You're going to have all of these great rivalries that mean a lot to college football fans. They're still going to be played. So to say, first and foremost, to throw out the history because college football doesn't care about that anymore, that is a ridiculous statement to make, because college football does still very much care about history and about rivalries. Despite the new playoff format, despite new conference realignments, it still is a league that is driven off of passion, off of rivalries, not only from on the field perspective, but from the fan bases as well. I mean, even during the time that A&M and Texas have not been playing games, their fans have still been going at each other's throats on social media. A&M fans saying Texas is scared to play them. Texas going back at A&M fans. Don't tell me that rivalries don't matter when even a game that's not being played on the field still has a rivalry within the fan bases. it still matters. So you don't throw it out the window, Colin. Also, to your point of getting rid of Notre Dame, this has to be the most softest, most participation trophy concept I have ever heard of. Why would you, just to make your schedule easier? Go ahead, do it, fine. Go ahead, get rid of teams, add cupcakes to your schedule. And then all of a sudden, when you're sitting there in that 13th spot and you're not getting into the college football playoff system and you're going, well, gee golly, I wonder why we're not there. It's because you're not playing anybody. You want a reference? Go to Tallahassee. Talk to them. See how they're feeling right now. Their schedule last year was soft as Charmin toilet paper. They had a couple of guys go down with injuries, and the committee left them out of the college football playoff. You can't manipulate your schedule to make it easier for you. Not in this day of college football. You can't do that. Worked with the BCS because the computer couldn't tell San Jose State from Texas A&M or Notre Dame or Florida or Georgia. It couldn't tell. It just saw the metric of, hey, you won a game 62-3. You must be pretty good. How many times did we have a championship game in the BCS where there was a lot of people going, are we really sure that that team's the team that's supposed to be playing for the national title? You know, I mean, it happened multiple times. Now that we have a collective group of people that sit here and look at schedules, they look at how strong your schedule is, your conference championship, and all of that stuff. Getting rid of games just because they're tough, that's just, it's ridiculous, and it's going to hurt you in the long run. So this is why whenever Colin Cowherd makes these comments on his show or puts out these views, and the crazy thing is he started off the segment by saying, the better sleep I get, the more hotter the takes are going to be. Well, this is a hot take, a hot steaming pile of you-know-what take. To say that USC should remove tough teams off their schedule just out of the sake of it being tough. That's what you have to do now in college football. You got to play the hard teams. Why do you think USC is leaving the Pac-12 to go to the Big Ten? To play the tougher teams. To have a stronger schedule. So if they're leaving their conference that they've dominated for I don't know how long and have always been one of the top teams in, if they're leaving that to go to a new conference where they could be like a middle-of-the-pack team because of what was already in the Big Ten in Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan, why would they risk that and then turn around and go, oh, gee, let's take teams off of our schedule because it'll make it easier on us? They're making this whole move to the Big Ten to make things tougher, to make their schedule stronger and tougher so that they can get better recognition from the College Football Playoff Committee. It is the same reason why, and we're going to talk about this coming up in a little bit, it is the same reason why you've got schools like Florida State now showing interest in possibly leaving the ACC to go to the SEC or even the aforementioned Big 12 or Big 10. You've got these schools wanting to leave these conferences to go to the stronger conferences because it gets them better looks from the College Football Playoff Committee. So why would a team make that move and then do this that Colin Cowherd is saying of, well, let's take Notre Dame off the schedule because it's too tough. I've already got to play these teams. Yeah, you've already got to play these teams. You're choosing to be in that conference to play those teams. Because having a schedule with LSU, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, and Notre Dame at the end of it, not to mention all the other teams. You got Michigan State, you've got Wisconsin, Northwestern, you've got all those other Big Ten teams. That's a pretty good resume if you're the College Football Playoff Committee looking at this and you've got USC on the bubble. That game against Notre Dame at the end of the year could be what pushes you into the college football playoff system. But Colin Cowherd wants to get rid of it because it'd make it easier on them. The game's too tough. Game's too tough. It's too rough. Let's get rid of it. Soft as Charmin toilet paper, if you ask me. And it's absolutely ridiculous that that's even something that we're considering doing. That you would even have that thought, then that makes me question how well Colin Cowherd understands the landscape of modern college football. right? Because we talked about it, a week or so ago on this show, that strength of schedule and marketability as far as what conference you're from are going to be the main factors that factor into this 12-team playoff. If you've got a soft schedule, you're not getting into the college football playoffs. And I'm going to tell you right now, you don't think the committee wouldn't think about it and take in part and take in mind if you're intentionally removing tough teams, trying to make it easier path for you to the college football playoffs? You don't think that if they have an Ole Miss team who has to play LSU, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, all of those teams, they've got to play all of those teams inside their own conference and some other teams as well. You've got those teams not bothering to change their schedule to make it weaker for them and help them get a better path to the college football playoff. And you've got one spot left, and it's between that Ole Miss team and a USC team who has specifically manipulated their schedule to fit the mold of them having an easier route to the college football playoff. Who do you think is going to get put in by the committee? The team that faced the fire and came out and has an opportunity to make the college football playoff? Or the team that said, well, let's go the easy route? Sorry, USC, you're not getting into the college football playoff. So this whole comment by Colin Cowherd to remove Notre Dame permanently from USC's schedule, it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And I see how much time we've talked about this, and honestly, it's a lot more time than I wanted to give something revolving around Colin Cowherd. So we're going to move on now. Saquon Barkley, living his best life with the Philadelphia Eagles, seems to be thriving in that new offense. Tends to happen when you have actually talented skill players around you in the offense. A quarterback who's competent, coaching that's competent, tends to happen. It's a better situation for him. I didn't bat one eye when the news came out that he was signing with the Eagles, because you know what? I don't blame him one bit. You're familiar with that division. You like that division. You want to stay in that division, but you want to play on a better team? Hey, go for it. That's exactly where he went. He went to the Philadelphia Eagles, and I honestly, DeVonta Smith, Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, all the other talented players they have on the offensive side of the ball there in Philly, I'm excited to watch the Eagles play this year. I think they're going to be fun to watch. I don't know if they're going to be a legit Super Bowl contender. I think they'll definitely be a playoff contender. They'll probably win that division easily, because I think right now their toughest opponent is Dallas. And let's be honest, we all know what the Cowboys are really, really good at, and it's not making it to the postseason. It's choking at the end of the year and getting left out. That's what they've become good at. So I think the Eagles win the division pretty easily. But again, they've got a tough road ahead of them once they get into the NFC playoffs, because they've still got the Detroit Lions to deal with. They're going to have the San Francisco 49ers to deal with. But adding a guy like Saquon Barkley can definitely help that. They've also got to not collapse. You know, as much trash as we're going to talk about the Cowboys collapsing and choking, yeah, the Eagles did their fair share of that the last few weeks of the season last year. So they've got to avoid that too. But they've made some moves in the offseason so far to kind of help protect that from happening again. So we'll see what happens there. But you got to be happy with that news if you're an Eagles fan. Saquon Barkley living his best life and thriving so far through OTAs in that new Eagles offense. Looks like we've got some more college football things to talk about here. Five-star quarterback Juju Lewis. Is he enough to keep Deion Sanders in Colorado after this season? Because here's the thing. His sons, Shador and Shiloh, they are going off to the NFL draft after this season. So what is there to keep him in Colorado? I've heard a lot of people say that if Billy Napier doesn't get the job done this year at Florida and he's let go, Deion Sanders could be the number one target for the Florida Gators. I don't know if that's true. That would be wild for Florida to go to a former Florida State player and say, hey, want to come coach our team? They'd have to pay a lot of money. But as far as the roster goes, adding guys like a Juju Lewis could be something that keeps him in Colorado. But I don't I don't fully agree with that. I could understand where that might keep him there for another season, but we'll talk more because this whole started, RJ Young had come out and was talking about if Colorado lands him. That's the first asterisk of this story is if Colorado can land this five-star talented quarterback. Because here's the thing. Originally, a soft commitment to USC was supposed to be part of the 2026 class, reclassified himself to where he is now part of next year's recruiting class. So he'll be signing in 2025, which means he'll be entering college a year early. Now he's decided to open up his recruitment a little bit more. And that's kind of opened the door for Coach Prime and the Colorado Buffaloes to kind of slide in there and give their pitch. And there's a lot of interest there. So that's the first asterisk, is that they don't even have him on the roster yet. So this is really an early conversation that we're having here about this, that it might actually even be a little too early, because if he stays at USC, then this is a point that's not worth making. But if he does decide he wants to change his mind, and again, it is a soft commitment to USC, so he's sort of kind of committed. If you've ever ridden Pirates of the Caribbean, the pirate's got one foot on the boat, one foot on the dock, and he's trying to balance the hat boxes he's holding in his hand while rocking back and forth. That's kind of his commitment right now. It's like, yeah, okay, I play for USC, but until I fully commit, I'm curious to see what else is out there, right? It's kind of the way it is for him right now. So whatever ends up happening there, if he does go to Colorado, like I said, I could see it being enough that keeps Deion at Colorado maybe for a year. But here's the thing. In the landscape of college football that we have now, with the transfer portal, with NIL, with all of the stuff that we have, if Billy Napier goes 4-8 this year as Florida's head coach, which Florida fans, you look at that back half of that schedule, that's a possibility. If Billy Napier goes 4-8 at the University of Florida this year and is in fact fired, because it doesn't matter what Scott Strickland says about giving votes of confidence, if the boosters are coming to you and saying, we want him out, they are out. Case in point, Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen had gone to 3 New Year's 6 games in a row. In 2020, had an opportunity to actually play for and potentially win a national title at Florida with Kyle Trask as the quarterback if they could have gotten past Alabama in the SEC title game. But he wasn't recruiting. He was only doing half the job. And the boosters came in and said, this is unacceptable. We can't keep having these recruiting classes, because with these lower level recruiting classes, you're going to start to see lower level talent coming into this program. And this program is going to get worse over time. And you've kind of seen that the last couple of years, right? Like, if you listen to Scott Strickland and Billy Napier talk about the team this year, this is kind of really that first year that Billy's got his guys in every spot of the team, and he feels good and he feels comfortable about this team. But if he goes 4-8, gets fired, Deion Sanders is brought in as the new head coach, first and foremost, he'd be able to do that before signing day, so he'd be able to just get Juju Lewis to flip his commitment to the University of Florida, follow him there. But let's say he decides to stay at Colorado for 1 year with Juju Lewis as his starting quarterback, then decides to take a job somewhere else, right? Like, let's say Lane Kiffin leaves Ole Miss and Deion Sanders decides to go back to Ole Miss. Not far-fetched, by the way. I mean, look where Deion started his coaching career, not too far from Oxford in Jackson, Mississippi, with Jackson State. So, could be something we see. Maybe he goes to Mississippi State. Who knows? But if Juju Lewis is on his team there in Colorado, Juju could just enter the transfer portal and follow him wherever he needs to go. So the whole question of, is Juju Lewis enough to keep Deion Sanders at Colorado? No, because Juju can just follow. If that relationship is as strong as that seems, according to RJ Young, then Juju could just follow Deion wherever he goes through the transfer portal. So there is no such thing anymore as a player being good enough to keep a coach at a program or a school, because honestly and truthfully, if the coach and that player have that bond and that player is good enough, when that player, or excuse me, when that coach goes to take a new job, the player just follows him there, goes and enters the transfer portal. Mentioned Billy Napier several times in this. Montrell Johnson just followed him from Louisiana Monroe. Or excuse me, not Louisiana Monroe. Louisiana. Sorry, Raging Cajun fans. I said the wrong school. There's like five all right there by each other in Louisiana. It gets geography gets a little skewed when you talk about all those schools. But he just followed him to Gainesville, right? So when Billy Napier left, took the Florida job, Montrell Johnson hit the portal, and there was really no doubt in anybody's mind where he was going. He was following his head coach to Florida. So Juju Lewis could just do the same thing, just hop in the transfer portal and follow Deion Sanders wherever it is he's going. We know Deion likes to bring luggage with him, especially if it's Louis. He said it himself when he took the Colorado job. So no, I don't think any player anymore at this level of college football that we have is good enough to keep any one particular coach at a job, because that player can just follow that coach to the next job now with the transfer portal. Speaking of transferring or just flat out leaving conferences, Florida State is the topic of possibly the next team to join the SEC. I mean, it could happen. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, well, you know what? By December, they could announce that they're joining the SEC, and then next year they'll be a member of the SEC. No, it'll still be a few years. But Florida State having that opportunity, again, because let's not forget, they did have that opportunity back in the day, and Bobby Bowden decided to stay in the ACC. I mean, rightfully so. They went on to dominate the ACC, and I think they probably would have had a little bit more of a tougher test in the SEC. But I think Florida State heading to the SEC would be smart. Look, the ACC is eventually going to fall apart. I will predict that, and I will say that now. The ACC is going to be the next major conference to go the way of the Pac-12, right? How the Pac-12 just kind of crumbled and fell apart. The ACC is going to be that next conference. There's just not a lot there. There is Florida State. There is Clemson. Then there's Miami, really. And even then, with Miami, it's a little shaky. If those teams decide to go to another conference, the ACC is done. Now, Miami hasn't really shown interest in leaving the ACC, simply because I think if you're Miami, if Florida State leaves and Clemson leaves, why the heck would you want to leave? Because suddenly that opens things up to make it a lot easier for you. So, I don't know why you would want to leave, but if I'm Miami, again, kind of going back to what we talked about with Colin Cowherd and him saying that USC should drop Notre Dame, you need to really be in these tougher conferences, playing these tougher conference opponents. So, yeah, if Florida State leaves, if Clemson leaves, if they want a shot at the playoffs, Miami should leave too. And I think Miami and Florida State would be great fits in the SEC. I really do. I think they both would be great fits. I think Clemson would be a great fit too, but I see Clemson more so going the route of the Big Ten. I see Clemson going that route of the Big Ten just because they're used to kind of that route. They're used to going up to those areas, you know, going and playing teams like Wake Forest and heading into North Carolina and just kind of where they're at on the map. I think they would be a better fit for the Big Ten. And I think Florida State and Miami very realistically could end up in the SEC. And, of course, SEC meetings happening over the last few days over in Destin, not too far from here. And somebody asked Scott Strickland, the athletic director of Florida, obviously Florida State's biggest rival outside of Miami. He's like, well, what would you think if Florida State was to join the SEC? And he said, you know what? We've got no problems with our friends there in Tallahassee. If they wanted to come and join the SEC, let them. May not be as easy as what they think it is, but let them. If they want to join the conference, go right ahead. It's like no school in the SEC has a veto clause. We can't go to the commissioner. We can't go to Greg Sankey and be like, hey, we don't want them in here. Veto. No, they're not allowed. You got to have 3/4 of the vote, right? So every school votes. No school can go in and be like, nope, we don't want this. Shutting it down. It's not happening. But they do get a vote. So even if Florida and athletic director Scott Strickland was to vote no, if the rest of the conference votes yes, Florida State still gets into the SEC. And he was like, you know what? Bring it on. If they want to join the conference, let them. And I think that's great. I think it's great. And I think it's what we're going to. I think more and more as we get into this college football playoff era, especially with the 12-team playoff starting now, you're going to see these schools start to kind of funnel into four major conferences. And I think we're already kind of starting to see the alignment. I think you're already kind of starting to see the SEC and the Big Ten being the top two. And then I think you're going to eventually see the Big 12 start to kind of build some ground, add a couple more teams. And like I said, if the ACC can't keep these major teams, they're going to disappear. And I think we even could see a new conference form altogether. If not, we may even see college football just go and say, all right, we're going to do a north, we're going to do a south, we're going to do an east, and we're going to do a west. The winners of the north, the winner of the east, the winner of the south, the winner of the west, that's our four automatic ins, and then we will fill out the rest of the 12-team playoff from there. So I think the landscape of college football over the next few years is going to drastically change. And if Florida State coming into the SEC is part of that, then I think it would definitely be welcome by everybody but the officials there at the ACC. They will be upset about it for sure. One last thing before we close out today's show. Billy Napier spoke and mentioned SEC Media Days. Our meetings are happening. Not Media Days. That's next. That's a couple of months from now. But the SEC meetings are happening in Destin. And obviously when Billy Napier took to the podium, lots of talk and lots of questions about the whole Jaden Rashada situation. Billy just said, simply put, he's comfortable in the part he played in that. And he doesn't seem to think that this is going to affect the upcoming season for the Florida Gators and really what he sees as the most talented team that he's had in his time there at the University of Florida. So Billy Napier just kind of seems unbothered by it. And I think a lot of people at the University of Florida are unbothered by it. I think they know that it's not really going to gain too much traction. That more than likely, probably what's going to happen is there'll be some type of agreement, probably a settlement or something like that. But right now, Billy Napier's like, yeah, my part I played in it, I'm happy with it. I would do the same thing over again because and we talked about it when the whole Jaden Rashada thing came out. Billy Napier really didn't have like a major part in it. Billy Napier wasn't the guy that came out and said, yeah, we're going to offer you this amount of money. Nope, we're pulling it back. That was more so the collective. The collective really was the issue here. And I think Billy Napier, the University of Florida, they kind of see that. And that's why they're just kind of like, nonchalant. Whatever's going to happen is happening. It's not going to affect the way we play in 2024. So we'll see if that's the truth once we get everything kicked off August 31st. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you have a great Thursday. This has been The Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, and ESPN Pensacola Podcast.